This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Missouri 4th District Representative Mark Alford. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Missouri Congressman Mark Alford next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The domestic agenda before the U.S. Congress is filled with challenging policy issues. But Missouri 4th District Representative Mark Alford says conflict in the Middle East could have a devastating set of consequences on the nation.
In 2 weeks, I'll be going to Israel and Jordan and Egypt, meeting with the Prime Minister, the King of Jordan, and someone from Egypt yet to be determined. But it's important to America. The Middle East has significance for not just the defense of the only democracy there, a true democracy, I think, that being Israel, a beacon of hope, I think, in the Middle East, but also for our security, because these Islamic terrorists who have surrounded Israel on every side but the Mediterranean, of course, they don't just not want Israel to be there. They want Israelis dead. And they see Israel as the little Satan and America as the great Satan. And so this has really become a conflict since last October 7th. We're coming up on the anniversary of the massacre of more than 1,000 innocent Jews. We were there in April. We went to the kibbutzes where people were slaughtered, burned alive, babies cut out of the womb. We met with the hostage families, Hirsch Goldberg Poland's parents. At that time, he was still alive, and they were hoping he could be returned to them safely. You know, there's still, I think, 5 Americans being held hostage in the subterranean city under Gaza, the tunnels that they've dug out. And it became quite clear to me that this could all be over if the Hamas terrorists would release the hostages and surrender. But Israel is not going to let the remnants of Hamas, these Islamic terrorist butchers, they're not going to let them stick around, reconstitute, and do the same thing over, because they have stated that that is their intent, for their leadership to survive and to reconstitute and take on Israel again. To the north, we have Hezbollah. Hezbollah in Lebanon, a terrorist organization funded by, I think, $16.5 billion that was released sanctioned money from Joe Biden. They went over to Iran, and Iran has been supplying Hamas and Hezbollah with the armaments and money that they need to strike Israel. We went to the Golan Heights in northern Israel. That whole area up there, over 100,000 citizens of Israel on October 8th were told that by their own government they need to get out and go south to Tel Aviv or other parts of the country until they got the situation from Lebanon's aggression, Hezbollah, under control. They have not been able to get that under control. Every day, rockets are being fired from Hezbollah. Missiles from Syria are hitting places. Israel is surrounded on all sides from people who don't want them to exist. And Israel has every right, I feel, to defend itself, to push the Hezbollah fighters back away from the border where their citizens in the Golan Heights can return and live in peace. Israel wants to live in peace. That's the thing about this. You know, we get a lot of these Code Pinko people who come to Washington and want to know about all these, you know, the babies being killed in Gaza. Well, the people, the Hamas terrorists are the ones using them as human shields. Hezbollah, they are hiding, launching missiles from homes in southern Lebanon. And so when you have monsters basically doing this, War is not pretty. There are casualties of war. Innocent people will be killed. But I fully support Israel's right to defend itself. And now we are sending apparently troops to that region. I believe they are going to remain on ships at this point. But it is, we've got to show the terrorists and those nations harboring them that the U.S. stands with Israel, and we are serious about trying to build peace. You know, we had the Abraham's Accord under President Trump. Saudi was so close to signing on to this. I'm hoping to meet with MBS when I go, hopefully, to Saudi as well in a couple of weeks. They want to do a deal. They want to be a signatory on that. But Hamas knew that. That's why they invaded Israel October 7th to fend off Saudi Arabia from doing that.
As much as the nation would like to concentrate on domestic issues alone, we can't really hide our head in the sand of this. Number one, from a measure of peace, but second of all, for commerce and oil and other elements that have to come through and around the Middle East.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, that is a big shipping lane and the Mediterranean. Israel produces a lot of agriculture. Everywhere I went in Israel in April, I saw a lot of ag. You look at some of the other theaters around the world that we're concerned with, Taiwan. People want to know, why are we going to help Taiwan in its self-defense if China decides to invade? Well, we have an agreement, the 1972 Taiwan Relations Act, that we will aid in Taiwan's self-defense. We owe them armaments that we have not gotten to them yet to try to deter Xi Jinping. People want to know, why are we doing that? Well, I'll tell you why. 65% of the world's goods go through the Straits of Taiwan and the South China Sea. And if and when there's an invasion, it will be a sea war. We will be involved in that. There will be a blockade set up by China around Taiwan. No shipping will get through. And it will probably project us into a depression bigger than the Great Depression, the late 1920s, early 30s. That's why we live in an economy that's not like it was 50, 60 years ago before we started trading under President Nixon with China. Now, the vast majority of the things we buy are quick and easy, come from Amazon, but made in China. We've got to reduce our dependency on China for everything, including our pharmaceuticals. But we live in a world economy, and we have to protect the interests of the American people and our national defense.
Congressman, this sounds like a loaded question, and we could talk about it the rest of the day and probably into the next week. But let's nettle it down to spending and to regulation and certainly to a farm bill. I asked the same question of Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. What's the difference if you elect a Democratic majority in the Congress or a Republican majority in the Congress with relation to spending, with relation to farm policy, and with relation to ideas of regulatory control in the nation?
It's total opposites. My concentration in my short tenure on the Ag Committee has been to protect our producers, to increase reference prices, to get those updated, increase our safety nets for our farmers that are going out of business or selling their land now to solar farms, because that is, you know, the input costs that this president has promulgated and weighted down our producers with is a tragedy. We're losing 1,000 farms a month in America. And in the short time that I've been in office in this great state of Missouri, still has the second highest number of farms in America behind Texas. We've gone from 95,000 farms to 87,000 farms in 18 months. Our food security is national security, and we've got to make sure that our farmers can stay in business and not sell out and not give away our food security. And that's what is slowly happening. The Democrats are going to concentrate on the SNAP program. And look, the food stamp program, supplemental nutritional assistance program. It's supposed to be a supplement. It's not a full ride on food, okay? It's supposed to be nutritional. We got to get nutrition back in the program. It's supposed to be assistance, which really means it's supposed to be a life vest, not not a lifestyle for people. And unfortunately, it's turned into a lifestyle. The ideas that the Republicans have are to make sure that we have food security in America for the present and for the future. The ideas for the Democrats is to give as much away to people, even those who aren't deserving or those who are committing fraud. Did you know we have $33 million a day in waste, abuse, and fraud and SNAP? That's $13.6 billion. You know, that's peanuts when you look at a $7 trillion budget, but it's still a lot of money. $13 billion is a lot of money. The Democrats are willing to not even address that because they want power and control, and they want people to vote for them. And so the more things you can give away, the more votes you're going to get. Those are the two stark differences. The farm bill, we've got to get on the floor during the lame duck. We passed the bipartisan farm bill out of committee back in April, I think. And we have not had time on the floor because of all these other budgetary appropriations and messaging bills to get it on the floor. We released a letter this week to the leadership with more than 120 signatories on it, gently, firmly encouraging leadership to get the farm bill on the floor during lame duck and let's get this thing done. When Trump wins, the Senate's going to cave, is my prediction. Stabenow, Senator Stabenow, who's not really released any text language on her end, we can't even negotiate a farm bill unless they release a text or something that we can negotiate. Otherwise, you're negotiating against himself, yourself. So I think when Trump wins, they're going to want the deal that we have on the table now, which increases food stamp program by $295 million, but also protects our farmers, rather than waiting and doing an extension and coming back next year, where it's going to be very much more restrictive on the food stamp program.
Congressman, there was a vote in the House of Representatives that basically would challenge the EPA's tailpipe emission standards that would, many believe, be a mandate toward electric vehicles in the country. Is this a congressional issue? Has the EPA overstepped its authority?
Yes, the EPA uses bad science and a lot of emotional gobbledygook to get things done. This is one of those. It's not following the science. I just bought a new golf cart. I love golf carts. I just don't want to drive one into Kansas City and back. And if you want to buy an electric vehicle, so be it. But the government should not be determining what you buy. And the program that they're trying to put forth is going to put handcuffs on the American drivers, and it's going to penalize our producers of ethanol and biodiesel that I fought so hard for over the last 18, 19 months to make sure that the standards are raised for them so we can give certainty for these people who are wanting to create new ethanol plants, who are wanting to create new biodiesel plants. But no one's going to come in and do that and invest, what, $100 to $200 million on a plant unless there's certainty that we're going to have at least an equal shot in the ag industry of producing clean burning fuels that are going to help the environment and are going to be efficient for your vehicles. And I like to use the analogy that, you know, if you look back in history, we used to light our homes in the 1800s with whale oil before kerosene, before petroleum fuels. When we went from whale oil to petroleum, there weren't government mandates. It was just the marketplace dictated that. And it was much easier to get the oil out of Pennsylvania, to refine it like Standard Oil did, to turn it into kerosene that we lit our homes. We don't need the government telling us what we need to drive, where we need to go. That is a Democrat idea. They want to have control over what we do. And part of it's all driven from the climate cult anyway. The cultists who have said since I was a kid, you know, we're all going to die because the carbon. Everything's carbon this, carbon that. Well, you know what? I took high school science, and I know that plants actually use carbon dioxide. It's called photosynthesis, and they turn it into oxygen. And if you fly like I do a lot, the vast majority of America is covered with trees. We need to be responsible, as our producers have been, with the land. I think there's no really better protector of God's creation than producers, because they realize that if they don't have clean soil and clean water and clean air, then they're not going to have the crops that we've had this year, such great crops, and they'll be out of business. Enough of the climate cultists, enough of the government telling us what to do with EV mandates.
Congressman, the American Farm Bureau seemed to suggest that it was the Environmental Protection Agency perhaps trying to skirt around the Supreme Court decision on WOTUS. How do you feel that EPA is living up to the Supreme Court decision with regard to waters of the U.S.?
We haven't had a hearing on that lately, but I've heard through the grapevine that they are trying to do an end run around the Supreme Court. But this is the modus operandi of this administration. Look what President Biden has done doing an end round on student loan forgiveness, sticking machinists and farm workers in Missouri with the debt of doctors in Delaware that have medical school payments to make, and they're going to forgive those loans. This administration doesn't care about the Constitution, because if they did, they would be following the Supreme Court decision. The Supreme Court decision was very clear with this WOTUS ruling, but we have agencies like EPA and the bureaucrats who will outlast us, and they know that, and they're up here doing their own thing. It's time with this deference decision that we are able to rein them in and write laws effectively. That's why I have such a great staff. We're going to have to do a better job of writing laws. We've done that with the counter to Prop 12 that GT came up with, our chairman, to counter what California is doing with its restrictions on swine production. That's put some of my people out of business in Missouri and in the 4th District. They can't afford to spend $500,000 or better on redoing their pens. We've got a solution to that in the Farm Bill. That's why it is so important that we increase our majority in the House, that we keep these gavels in the Ag Committee on armed services to rebuild our military in every aspect. I don't think the average American realizes what's at stake if we don't have majority. If we don't have majority, we don't have the gavels. We can't get to the truth. We won't be able to do oversight, and we won't be able to deliver for the American people.
It seems in agriculture we spend a lot more time talking about regulation and litigation than we do about legislation. And with that, the EPA is trying to avoid litigation about the Endangered Species Act. It's already issued a plan for herbicides, insecticides, and fungicides are yet to come. What's the process here, and how do you see this continuing to play out, as farmers still need crop protection tools for productivity and sustainability?
We've got to make sure that we encourage the EPA, number one, follow the science. They don't follow the science. Again, they go off emotion. They go off of shaky science that environmental wackos bring them. One of the things we have a problem with is the American burrowing beetle. We know that Enlist D is a pesticide that will handle that problem. And we've got to make sure that we have the science to back it up, that it is safe for use. And we've just got to get the EPA to take a closer look at the evidence at hand and follow the science. You know, the administration, the Democrats were big on during COVID, follow the science. When it comes to real science, though, they don't want to pay attention to it. And that's all we're asking them to do.
Congressman, a few weeks ago, you offered your thoughts on the challenge of food labeling in the nation. Don't assume that a farm bill is going to dig into that, and that actually crosses a number of different agencies. How would you rewrite food labeling if it was under the power of your pen?
Well, we introduced the Fair Label Act back in, I think, February, and my co-signer on that was actually Jonathan Jackson, a Democrat from South Side of Chicago, the son of Jesse Jackson. Basically, what the Fair Label Act would do, but it would make sure that a busy family going into an urban core grocery store anywhere in America, and the mom is picking out protein for the family, when you get to the meat counter or the meat frozen section there, and you see the term meat on something, that is actually meat. Basically, you cannot call, if it doesn't come from an animal, you can't call it meat. It's very simple. And so Jonathan Jackson, a Democrat, the son of Jesse Jackson, we're on Ag Committee together. I actually brought him to the Sedalia State Fair, our state fair in Missouri in Sedalia. And really got to educate him about where food comes from. He's concerned about the food supplement, the SNAP program. And I'm trying to educate our members. Look, it is a symbiotic relationship. If we don't have producers, we can't feed the people in America. The SNAP program is also a big market for our producers. The USDA, though, the bottom line, the USDA really needs to, I think, do a better job of and maybe have a bigger role in food labeling.
Congressman Alford, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Sir, it is Open Mic, and today you have the last word.
This is a scary time in America. I have talked about the election, how I believe this is the most consequential election of our lifetime. I am a big proponent of America. I believe in America. I believe in America that still stands for the flag and kneels in prayer and sits down with a family at table and rises to meet the challenge of each new day. And that's not just a campaign speech. That is in my heart. And I think we need to inspire others to greatness in America, like Ronald Reagan did. And I've told President Trump this on several occasions. I want to help you make America great again, but I also want to help you make Americans great again. I think that's one thing that Kamala Harris has hit on in this campaign. And while she really says a lot of words and says nothing, she's captured onto this joy theme. My joy comes from the Lord. My confidence comes from the American people in that we can rise above this. I still believe that our best days are ahead of us as a nation. Our best days are ahead of us for the farmers and ranchers and producers of America. Our best days are ahead of us for our business leaders and mom and pops trying to start small businesses in rural America who may be listening right now. We're trying to get the Small Business Administration into gear to get them out in the rural communities to help people start businesses. The sunshine is coming. Hang on, folks. Our best days are ahead.
Our thanks to Missouri Congressman Mark Alford, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.